are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. And in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Our text line, 334-564-1840. How are you feeling on this Tuesday afternoon? The start of the World Series, Game 1 between the Houston Astros and the Atlanta Braves. America's team. Lance, how you doing today, my man?
Doing great, Noah, and I've already noticed I walked into the studio and some of the trash talk has already begun. I just want to let everybody know I am currently abstaining from trash talk. If we win tonight, then I will come back tomorrow and I will be very annoying. But until that point, I will remain silent because I think as of right now we're going to be in a fight with the Houston Astros. I'll just say that.
Framber Valdez, the starter for the Houston Astros. Charlie Morton, the starter for the Atlanta Braves. The Braves have been great at winning game ones throughout this postseason. Red hot right now. We're going to talk about that game coming up at 3 p.m. on today's show. But we're going to start off today's show with takeaways from media availability. You had Brandon Council, you had Colby Wood in today, and they were pretty much echoing their head coach's sentiments from yesterday about how this team handled the bye week, and it's all football coming up against Ole Miss this Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's going to be a lot of focus on the Rebels this weekend and what Auburn's going to have to do defensively in order to try and contain them. Colby Wooden also mentioned that the defense got some of their key members back during the off week. You would assume that would include guys like Owen Papo. If he's going to return fully healthy, that would be a huge key for the Auburn Tigers. But yeah, just focusing up, you know, we talked about it on yesterday's show, just a lot of outside distractions in terms of potential things that could frustrate the Auburn fan base and what Brian Harsin was discussing yesterday. You know, he didn't really get into a whole lot of it, but you know, at this point, I think coming up towards the biggest game of the season at this point, I would argue for Auburn, if I'm the fan base, I'm not worried about outside distractions right now. I'm worried about focusing on this Ole Miss team and how are we going to beat them. I mean, they've still got a Heisman candidate in Matt Corral. They've got a very good offense. While their defense may still stink, it's still somewhat improved. Auburn coming off of a bye week, trying to get healthy. I think it's important to try and focus on those things instead of outside things that right now we as fans can't really control. Again, this is a really exciting matchup this weekend, and I appreciate the fact that these players are focused, and it's a testament to Harsin's, you know, the 1-0 mentality and getting better each and every week, and I'm just appreciative of the fact that these players seem focused and dialed in.
I'm thankful the game's at 6 p.m.
Yes, sir.
Top 10 team coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium, 6 p.m. this Saturday. That place is going to be rocking.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm very thankful that, like you mentioned, that it's at 6 o'clock. What I am a little bit frustrated about is the following week, the SEC kind of has Auburn in a round robin, kind of going around trying to decide, you know, there are three different time slots that Auburn could potentially be playing in, and there are two other matchups that are going to be filling the other two time slots. It's just whether or not Auburn wins this weekend will determine where they play next weekend. They'll either be 11 a.m. against A&M, they'll either be 2:30 CBS against A&M, or it'll be at 6 p.m. on ESPN. Personally, if it were me choosing next weekend's time, I would want the game at 11 a.m. because I don't want A&M to be rested and I don't want College Station at night.
I understand not wanting College Station at night. Let's get him at 2:30.
Okay, sure. Anything but 6 p.m. That's all I want. I want LSU, Alabama in that 6 p.m. time slot. I'll take Georgia in one of the two early ones, and I'll take Auburn in either 2:30 or 11. That would be perfect. That would be perfect for me. But this weekend's game at 6 p.m. I think favors Auburn a little bit because of that home field advantage at night. Jordan-Hare Stadium is going to be rocking.
Also, there's nothing you can do about Texas A&M being rested. You want to know why?
Why?
They're on a bye week.
Man. That's disappointing.
They're on a bye week this week.
Well, that's going. I don't know how many problems that poses for Auburn, because Auburn is. Have they lost in College Station ever?
No.
Okay, so there you go. While it may be still,
it's a children's playground for the Auburn Tigers.
Maybe a hostile environment for teams like Alabama. Who even cares? Auburn's come in there and they've made it their own these past few seasons. So I think they've definitely got some good things heading in their direction if they are able to beat Ole Miss in terms of building up some momentum, some confidence. And again, just gearing up towards the end of this season's slate.
Not just because he's one of Auburn's best players, but I think from a schematic perspective against Ole Miss this upcoming weekend, it's absolutely crucial that Owen Papo is back and ready to play. And I do hope he is indeed one of those players that Colby Wooden and Coach Harsin were talking about throughout this week at media availability as guys that are back on the defensive side of the football.
Absolutely. Yeah, you look at what Auburn's going to try and do in this game against Matt Corral. They're going to try and play a little bit of contain. They're going to try and make him beat the Tigers with his arm. You don't want to see Ole Miss marching down the field and Matt Corral extending plays with his legs. You want to try and contain him, make him beat you with your arm, and kind of make them sustain drives. That's really, I think, the most important thing for Auburn is keep everything in front of you and make Matt Corral sustain drives with his arm. And I think having guys like Owen Papo out on the field in terms of pass coverage, in terms of football IQ, understanding what's going on, understanding what Ole Miss is going to throw at the Auburn defense, I think it's very, very important that Auburn has him both mentally and athletically on the field, because while Zakobi McClain and Chandler Wooten are playing very well right now in his absence, you know, Owen Papo is still a former five-star linebacker and a future NFL prospect for a reason. He's going to make a huge impact whenever he gets on the field for this team. I think it's also important that Auburn realizes what they're going to have to do in the second level, not just in linebackers, but in the secondary. I think having an extra linebacker on the field is definitely going to help that. Whenever you look at guys like Owen Papo, whether it's to be a spy, to cover a running back on some type of route. I know Jerry and Ely likes to catch the ball out of the backfield a little bit. You're going to see a lot of things from this Ole Miss offense, and just, you know, having Owen Papo out on the field is just an extra body that is experienced and athletic is going to be really important.
He's good in pass coverage, comparatively speaking, to other linebackers. You talk about putting a spy on Matt Corral. Zakobi McClain can do that very well, but also you look at Auburn's linebacking core right now without Owen Papo. They need Papo for pass coverage, at least I think. Auburn's zone coverage in the middle of the field gets a lot better if Papo's back.
I agree, and then also you look at the other linebackers that have been playing in his absence outside of McClain and Wooten. I don't want to knock on any specific guy. I just don't think the depth is there yet, and I think that's just going to come with more experience.
Wooten has over 50 tackles at this point. He and Zakobi McClain combined have over 100 tackles. They've played well in stopping the run, but I do think some of those holes that we've been seeing in the zone coverage, they're bolstered a bit if Owen Papo's back.
Absolutely, yeah. This defense is going to need every single body that they can get out on the field this weekend. It's going to be really important that Auburn is healthy, Auburn is focused. This is going to be the most dynamic offense that they have faced up until this point in the season, and I don't think they're going to face a more dynamic offense through the course of the rest of the season, even whenever they get to play Alabama at the end of the year. This team is talented, this team is experienced, and they've got a Heisman candidate at quarterback. You're going to need every single player out there that you can that can give you efficient minutes, and you're going to get guys like Owen Papo out there, and I think Auburn's going to make the most of it.
There was some conversation today at Auburn's media availability between Colby Wood and Brandon Council about Auburn's group of tight ends, namely the young budding star of Landon King, who's really came on over the last 3 weeks or so. What are we looking at from the tight ends now coming off of a bye week where they are able now to install a little bit more into this offense? And Coach Harsin talked about that on Monday, that they are still adding new wrinkles. They're still adding and installing new things to this offense. And I definitely think that applies to the tight ends and someone as talented as Landon King.
Absolutely. I think it causes problems for opposing defenses, especially defenses like Ole Miss's, where you're just looking at a bunch of different targets that you can't really contain all at once. If you're going to put out two or three tight ends on the field, if you're Auburn, it makes it really difficult for a defense to guess, okay, if all of them can catch the football, which one of these guys is going to be catching the football on this play? It's going to, if you're that versatile, it makes it very difficult for opposing defenses to stop. The most important thing, I think, for this tight end group is continuing to be efficient and actually catching the football. We've seen some drops this season, both from the receivers and tight ends, a little bit of inconsistency there. But if you're going to get more tight ends involved like Landon King, I think it's absolutely great. Let's see how many guys we can get involved because, again, making this group more versatile makes it more difficult to stop. But you've got to also understand Landon King is very young, very inexperienced, and I think you're going to have to not expect him to shoulder a huge workload early on. I think you're just going to have to get the ball to him sparingly and see what he can do with it. And then as time goes on, increase his role. But I also think that there are three other tight ends in this group that can also do what King is doing right now, which is emerging as a legitimate receiving threat.
Switching gears here a bit, talking about this matchup coming up this weekend against Ole Miss. Who do you think is going to start at left tackle, Killian Zaire or Austin Troxell, who was one of those guys who was specifically mentioned by Coach Harsin yesterday that he's back?
I think it's going to be Austin Troxell, but Killian Zaire in Troxell's absence last weekend did play well. Harsin said yesterday, I believe he said that he knows the offensive line can get better and he thinks that there's going to be some competition in that offensive line room. So apparently this coaching staff likes what they saw out of Zaire. They're definitely going to give him a shot, give him a little bit more reps and practice. Troxell coming off of what was an injury, I still would expect Troxell to be the guy moving forward. I mean, I know Zaire played well, but he was the starter up until this point for a reason, and I think you're going to give that guy in Zaire a shot. But at the end of the day, I think you got to stick with your starting left tackle, right? If you're going to try and continue to build that chemistry among the offensive linemen heading into what is going to be a very important stretch over the next few weeks in SEC play.
Let's talk about quarterback play here. Bo Nix, obviously, not better than Matt Corral from a statistical standpoint, not better in terms of arm talent or even rushing ability. I think we can look at this matchup here and say Matt Corral is the better quarterback, but Bo Nix has really came on as well over the last 3 weeks or so, stretching all the way back to that LSU game. A quote today from the press conference, Justin Hokanson put this out on Twitter. Find him on Twitter, @_JHokanson. Quote, I like him more in the pocket. He makes plays. He's Houdini. He does it all. He got more comfortable with us this year. He trusts us. That helps his game, end quote. That coming from Auburn offensive guard Brandon Council about his quarterback. We've seen Bo Nix flourish a bit inside the pocket, and there's one of his offensive linemen talking about it.
And he plays very well at home, Nix does, and I would expect that trend to continue this weekend against what is a porous Ole Miss defense. I think that making him a pocket passer has been good for him at times this season. I think it was especially proven last weekend against Arkansas, where Nix was completing over 80% of his passes. But I also will say this. We saw this in 2017 with Jarrett Stidham when Auburn was making their SEC championship run. As time went on and as the season went on, they started running Jarrett Stidham, I feel like, a little bit more. We got to see that in the Georgia game. We got to see it in the Alabama game. They required their quarterback to make plays with his legs whenever they needed it most. And I think we are going to see Nix down the line in these really big games continue to try and make things happen late with his legs. Point being, we saw it against Arkansas this past weekend a couple of different times. We saw it on third down, and we saw him score on a run from about, I believe it was like 20 yards out or something like that. So moving forward, I think Bo Nix is a fantastic pocket passer. I think that he is going to be more efficient if these receivers are catching the football. And if he's putting a little bit of touch on the ball as well, that certainly wouldn't hurt. The accuracy could definitely stand to be a little bit more improved. He's only completing 60.7% of his passes right now, but yeah, I think he definitely works as a pocket passer, and then having that running ability as a second-hand thing to where you don't have to rely on it if you're Nix. I think that's been really important this offseason, something that this coaching staff has really stressed, is not taking off when you don't need to, but we're going to use your running ability whenever we need to because you are still gifted enough athletically to where you can go out there and make a play. It's like Joe Burrow. Whenever they needed him to run a QB draw, they would run it and he'd get it. With Nix, if they need him to run a draw or something like that, he's going to go out there and get it. But we're going to try and make you a pocket passer because you work at your best whenever you're in the pocket throwing dimes.
I'm curious if that's 100% true. Not disagreeing with you. I would love to see Bo Nix be at his best inside the pocket. But we had a call last week, and I can't remember who called in about it. I would like to see more designed quarterback runs, some more read option concepts in the offense.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think that's exactly what you have to add to the offense. It doesn't necessarily have to be the read option. It doesn't necessarily have to be read pass option. It doesn't necessarily have to be RPOs. But I would like to see more designed QB runs in order to help this running game become more effective as well, to take some of the pressure off of these running backs.
Absolutely, and it's not just all on the passing game to make this offense go. Like you just mentioned, I think it's important that the running game is able to kind of revive itself after having a slump as SEC play has gotten started, and I agree with you. I think it's going to be really important, again, like I mentioned earlier, down the stretch, Auburn running Bo Nix a little bit more, because throughout the course of this season, early on, they've given the indication that they've kind of wanted to stray away from that. Well, whenever you get into these bigger games against Ole Miss this weekend, Texas A&M, Alabama, throw in that wrinkle when people least expect it, throw in that read option, throw in that quarterback run, and you're going to be able to pick up yards, because we've seen Nix do it in the past. He's still athletic enough to go out there and get it done. I'm not saying that he's a bad runner. I'm saying I would like to see more of it, but I also am pleased with what I've seen over the past couple weeks from him as a pocket quarterback.
You also understand from the past 2 years of watching him under Gus Malzahn how pertinent and how important it is for him to develop as a pocket passer and to be comfortable in the pocket, and I agree 100% with that. Let's switch gears to talking about basketball. We'll continue to preview this Auburn-Ole Miss game throughout the week. Tomorrow will be Report Wednesday as well, as we'll break down Ole Miss from a schematic and analytical perspective, what we can expect to see from the Rebels. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll continue throughout the week, once again, to preview this matchup between Auburn and Ole Miss, but I do want to talk a little basketball here before we get out of this first segment. First team All-SEC, second team All-SEC. These preseason All-SEC teams are released today by the conference. The coaches, obviously, the ones who are voting on these. And for Auburn, they land Alan Flanagan in the first team and Jabari Smith on the second team. Some high praise there for the Tiger with the torn Achilles.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen him continue to develop over these first two seasons with the Auburn Tigers. In his first season, offensively, he was inept. He wasn't doing a whole lot of things, but you could see the raw talent. He was athletic. He had the potential to grow into something bigger, and we saw that in his sophomore season. I believe he averaged over 14 points per game for the Tigers. His shooting dramatically improved. His leadership was proven. His defense was getting better. He's just a complete basketball player, and I think we're going to see him in a lot of different NBA mock drafts once he comes back and he is fully healthy, because he is deserving of that first-team All-SEC role. And, man, we've talked about it. I believe we talked about it last weekend with Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com, just breaking down Auburn basketball's roster and projecting starting lineups. And we were just talking about, like, man, imagine what this group could look like if Alan Flanagan was in the starting lineup. Because while Auburn's team is still really talented, they've still got a lot of depth. Missing that leadership and missing that key cog at the small forward position would be massive if Auburn got that back, because you also have to think about, well, he's also transitioning from playing point guard and shooting guard last season back to his natural position. So I think the efficiency is going to be there. I think the communication between the team is going to be there now that he's back comfortable where he wants to be. It's a phenomenal piece to Auburn's basketball roster, and I really hope that he comes back as quickly as possible.
Not that it won't still be, because I do think there are still great defenders in this starting lineup, but if he was out there, man, Auburn would have the nastiest defensive starting five in the entire conference, I think.
You got Zepp Jasper. Think about this type of lineup. Zepp Jasper, Katie Johnson, Alan Flanagan, Jabari Smith, Walker Kessler.
That's just stupid.
That is an Elite Eight team or a Final Four team if you've got some shooters that can back it up.
100%. The defense is definitely deep tournament run caliber, and that is something that you need to make a deep tournament run. You got to be able to play defense. You also need a great backcourt. I think we still have some questions about this backcourt, about how good it will be. We know it'll be good, but how deep of a tournament run good are they going to be? That's a big question to be asked. Let's talk about some of these other guys here. I'll just run through the rest of the preseason all-conference team here, and then we'll head to a quick break. First team All-SEC, Jaden Shackelford and Javon Quinterly for Alabama. J.D. Notte for Arkansas. Alan Flanagan, of course, for Auburn. Colin Castleton for Florida. Sevier Wheeler at Kentucky. Darius Days, LSU. Iverson Molinar at Mississippi State. John Fulkerson at Tennessee. Man, he is still there.
Yeah.
He is still playing college basketball.
10 years later.
Scottie Pippen Jr. at Vanderbilt. Second team All-SEC, a little bit shorter of a list. Devontae Davis, Arkansas. Jabari Smith, Auburn. Keon Brooks Jr. at Kentucky, Kellen Grady at Kentucky, Oscar Tshiebwe at Kentucky, Xavier Pinson, LSU, Garrison Brooks, the North Carolina transfer, local Auburn High School product over at Mississippi State, and then Keyshawn Bryant at South Carolina. Those are your preseason All-SEC first and second teams that dropped here today, this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk winners and losers of the college football weekend. Who are the biggest winners of the weekend? Coming up on the other side of this break, you're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Our text line at 334-564-1840. We want to hear from you. Anything on your mind in the sports world, questions, comments, takes that you've got that you want to bring our way, bring it up here on the Line. You can call in at 334-321-1390. Winners and losers of the weekend. We've just got enough time here to talk about the winners. We may even continue that on into our next segment. Lance, biggest winners, give me one, and then I'll give you one, a big winner of the college football weekend.
Everybody that hates Clemson. That is a winner, I would say. I wouldn't say that's the biggest winner.
It can be one of them, though.
It's one of them, certainly. Biggest winner of the weekend, I think you got to go with Wake Forest if you're talking about biggest winner in terms of dropping 70 points on Army. That is an impressive final score there, 70-56. Look, their defense may be trash, but Wake Forest has been able to figure it out offensively. I remember back in the day, like in 2014-15, just a few years ago, when this team was absolutely terrible, and Dave Clawson has kind of brought them out from nowhere, and just they've been competitive, they've been consistent offensively, and currently they're 7-0 and getting a win in that type of fashion, to me personally, regardless of the defense, I think is impressive. So, biggest win by literally scoring 70.
I'm still trying to figure out who this Demon Deacons team is, 13th ranked in the country, and I know some people out there may be scoffing at what I just said because they'll say, well, they haven't played anybody. I'll tell you who they are. They're not very good. They play in the ACC, and I do think there's some credence to that based off of how Wake Forest has played over the last few weeks. They've beaten Old Dominion, Norfolk State, Florida State, Virginia, Louisville, Syracuse, and Army.
Natty champs, baby. Let's go.
I mean, who's the best team on that list that they've beaten? And the way that Florida State's playing right now, you might be able to say Florida State.
You might be able to say Florida State. Louisville and Syracuse also come to mind. But none of these teams, I would say, if we're talking about like the best team on their schedule, we can find that. But in terms of like quality opponents, none of these teams, I don't really feel like that they've beaten or truly are.
Last five games for Wake Forest coming up. A home game against Duke this weekend. They're at North Carolina. Home game against NC State. At Clemson and at Boston College to round out the season. Does this team win the Atlantic Division?
I think that they do right now. You're looking at that back half of that schedule being more challenging than what they've faced up until this point. Right now, they're being pushed by NC State, who just lost this past weekend to Miami. The NC State and Wake Forest play November 13th. It's at Wake Forest. I would give the edge to the Demon Deacons in that matchup. So, yeah, undefeated in conference play right now, 4-0. I think if you lose one game, you're still able to kind of clinch it out. And I think you're able to beat teams like Duke, North Carolina, Boston College simply because you just have a better offense. NC State and Clemson are the two games from I'm looking at where it's like, well, those could be tough, but I think that Wake Forest should be favored in most of those matchups.
As long as Wake Forest beats NC State, they can take two losses.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, if Clemson were to win out in these circumstances, you would have a three-way tie atop the Atlantic Division featuring Clemson, NC State, and Wake Forest.
Well, look at what Clemson's having to face if they do win out. They're playing Florida State this weekend. They play at Louisville, UConn, Wake Forest, and then out South Carolina. So it is definitely within the realm of possibility that Clemson wins out, Wake Forest loses, and then NC State is sitting there at the end of the day somehow beating Wake Forest as well, and then you're in that three-way tie, which would be which would be just the epitome of what we've seen in the ACC so far this season.
Be the epitome of what we've seen in college football this season. I'm going to go in a different direction at a team that was utterly dominant this weekend for one of my big winners, and we're going to continue this into our next segment as well because I do have a couple more. I'm going to say Ohio State.
Okay.
Absolutely trouncing Indiana. First of all, I wonder where Indiana's will is at. Sitting at 2-5, winless in the conference. This team looked a lot better a few weeks ago. They just haven't been able to get things right at the quarterback position with Michael Penix this season. And whether it's been him or the backup, they just haven't been able to get things right at the QB position. Penix just isn't the same coming off of that injury that he sustained last season. Ohio State, though, it doesn't feel like there's any pressure on Ohio State at this point. Every single week, and granted, they haven't really played anybody since that loss to Oregon about a month ago, but every single week, they just kind of quietly go about their business, dominating the next team on their schedule. And this week, they've got Penn State at home, an opportunity to make a major statement and say, hey, we very much so still deserve to be in this college football playoff discussion, whereas a lot of people wrote them off just because they wanted to, because they wanted it to fit their narrative after they struggled with Minnesota in week one and then got beat up by Oregon in week two.
This weekend, Ohio State is favored by 18.5 against Penn State. The line opened at 16.5. They will play Nebraska, Purdue, Michigan State, and Michigan. They're currently favored by 10.5 against Michigan. You would like to think that Ohio State will be favored by double digits in the rest of their matchups heading out this regular season. Ohio State, like you mentioned, quietly dominating the Big Ten.
18.5 point favorites over Penn State. I've got this feeling that this week in college football is going to be a sobering reality for a lot of people, that you probably are still going to have several of the same teams in the college football playoff at the end of the year.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
32 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Lance Dahl and Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. If you want to call in, give any takes on anything going on in the sports world, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. I want to remind everybody that we are going to have coverage of the World Series tonight right here on ESPN 106.7. If you're not able to get to a television, you want to keep it right here on ESPN 106.7. Going to have coverage of Atlanta versus Houston, game one tonight of the World Series. We were talking about winners and losers in college football from the weekend of the previous segment. Want to get to some more winners and losers here. Noah, do you have any other winners from the weekend before we get to losers?
I've got several winners still. I want to go with San Diego State as a winner this weekend, 20-14 over Air Force to advance to 7-0. That's one of the last difficult teams that they've got on their schedule. Of course, they still have some other roadblocks in front of them. San Diego State, and by far the tougher division of the Mountain West in the Western Division. They've still got to play Fresno State, who currently right now is 6-2, 3-1. They've still got to play Nevada, who's 5-2, 2-1. And they've still got to play Boise State from the other side. Boise's 3-4, 1-2. But of course, we know how talented that program is among other Group of Five programs. And then they've also got a game against Hawaii, who is having a pretty difficult season this year at 4-4 overall, 1-2 in the conference. It's possible for San Diego State to go undefeated here. It is possible. And we're not talking about them as being one of the best Group of Five teams in college football. We have been talking about Coastal Carolina. We have been talking about BYU. We have been talking about Cincinnati. And I'm not saying that San Diego State holds a flame with Cincinnati, but San Diego State is a Group of Five program also, with a rich history in college football. And this is not just some flash-in-the-pan season for SDSU. This is them continuing stuff that they have done for several years, or really for much of the last decade. They have a rich history in college football. This is a good program, and they just got another significant win. They've beaten two Pac-12 schools this year, one of the front runners in that Pac-12 race until they lost to Oregon State this past weekend in Utah. They have some quality wins, and this win over Air Force, 20-14, on the road, might I add, against a cross-divisional opponent is going to be able to give you some confidence to be able to go on and beat Fresno State, beat Nevada, and beat Boise State, all of which are at home. UNLV and Hawaii on the road, as long as you don't fall asleep in those games, we could be talking about SDSU in a group of five, New Year six kind of way, undefeated. This team just took a huge step towards that with that win over Air Force this past weekend.
And like you mentioned, it's not like San Diego State, they're just coming out of nowhere doing this, out of the woodworks. They've been doing this consistently for years. They've been winning. They've been controlling the ground game consistently. They've had a stable of running backs that have rotated throughout the program over the past few years that have been phenomenal. Yeah, this is a program that is very consistent. They're kind of like the Iowa of the Mountain West. They just win. They're just able to get over 500 consistently. Now, there was a dip, I believe I might be mistaken, over the past couple of years in terms of what they were able to do. But overall, this is a complete program. They've been winning every single game so far this season, most of the time in convincing fashion. They've just been able to do what they've done for years, which is just establish the ground game and just take over. The fact that they've beaten two Power 5 schools, if you want to call them, in Arizona and Utah is impressive so far this season. You get a team like Air Force on the road, you beat them. Like you mentioned, it's a momentum builder heading into this stretch that includes Fresno State, Nevada, and Boise State. All three of those teams, that they all three have impressive quarterbacks. So it's great for San Diego State right now, and I'd love to see them finish the season undefeated and get to a New Year's Six Bowl type of season.
Another winner that I've got, Miami. Just to get to 3-4, they beat a ranked NC State team. Granted, it was at home, but they beat them 31-30. And this is a Miami football team that has played an absolutely brutal schedule. Home game against Alabama, neutral site game against Alabama. They were the home team in that game, but neutral site game against Alabama to open the season. After that, they got an Appalachian State team that is currently in the thick of the race in the Sun Belt, just knocked off a ranked Coastal Carolina team. They have a history of also being a good Group of Five program. That, by far, is not an easy matchup. They were only able to win that game by 25-23. After that, they had to play Michigan State, and at the time, we didn't know Michigan State was this good, but now they're an undefeated top 10 program and one of the few teams in college football that you can say they have a good offense and a good defense. After that, they beat Central Connecticut State University. They paired that up with back-to-back losses against Virginia and North Carolina. They hadn't beat anybody good yet this year. They had played an absolutely brutal schedule, and they found a way to beat NC State to get them their third win of the season, with which, looking at their last five games, gives them the potential to get to bowl eligibility. The win over NC State was the defibrillator for a program that looked like it may be looking for a new head coach at the end of the year, and it still may be, but their final five games are at number 17 Pittsburgh, a home game against Georgia Tech, who's cooled off since trouncing North Carolina a few weeks ago, at Florida State, a home game against Virginia Tech, and you're at Duke. I can see three or four wins right there for Miami to potentially finish this season 7-5 or 6-6, which is huge for a guy like Manny Diaz, who may be coaching for his job for the rest of this year, because you know what the standard is at Miami, and we know that he hasn't hit it yet, but clearly this team must still be playing for him if they found a way to beat NC State 31-30.
Absolutely, yeah. And like you just mentioned, he is in essence coaching for his job at this point, because you know there's going to be a coaching carousel one way or another this offseason that is going to include some major names in the college football world. USC, LSU, Miami could get thrown into the mix. Florida State could be something that we could potentially be looking at. I know that kind of has cooled off over the past couple of weeks, but that could be a reality as well. Miami could be looking at Mario Cristobal. I know he's got some South Florida ties. You could potentially be looking at a move there. Mario Cristobal coming from Oregon. But
that would be a huge get from a recruiting standpoint.
Absolutely. But like you mentioned with Miami, they're just kind of on the ropes right now. The fact that they were able to bounce back and get a win over NC State shows that the quarterback move that they made after Derek King was injured is working somewhat. Tyler Van Dyke right now has already has over 1,000 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's not been a world beater, but he's been pretty solid. And this weekend, I think that they have an opportunity. I'm not calling for an upset. I don't even think there's a whole lot of upset potential here. I'm just saying they could pull a Pittsburgh on Pittsburgh and beat them on the road, and that would be It's just like, well, that's the ACC for you this year. So, absolutely.
And with that being said, I would hate to see that because my last winner of the weekend is Pittsburgh. 6-1 on the year, number 17. I'm angry that they lost to Western Michigan because this would be a top 10 team at this point. This, with the way that AP voters have worked this year, this would be a top 5 team if they had found a way to beat Western Michigan back in week 3. I guess that defense took a gut punch that week because since that moment when they gave up 44 points against the Broncos, they beat New Hampshire 77-7, only gave up 7 against New Hampshire, 21 against Georgia Tech, 7 against Virginia Tech, and then 17 against Clemson. Now, there aren't a whole lot of great offenses across those four games, but I think in the grand scope of the college football season, I don't think that you would say Western Michigan's offense is great. It may be a good MAC offense, but I don't think you'd say it's a great offense. You would probably say that it is along the same lines of a Georgia Tech if it was put into the Power Five. Since then, they've won 4 straight. They've been convincing in all 4 victories, with all of them being at least multi-possession wins, and then putting that stamp over Clemson. Beating Clemson, and sure, Clemson may not be a great team this year, but they are more talented than Pittsburgh. Just look at the recruiting rankings. They are. If Clemson had a quarterback, they're back in the playoff again. That is the root of all of these issues for Clemson at this point, is they just can't throw the football. It's kind of crazy to see DJ Uiagalelei on Dr. Pepper college football playoff commercials and seeing him come out of a transfer portal this past weekend when I'm watching college football. It's hilarious. But Pittsburgh beating Clemson told me, okay, this team is for real, at least in the scope of the ACC. Maybe not in terms of all of college football, because once again, they, like Wake Forest and insert other ACC team here, like a Virginia or a Syracuse, or looking at the standings, I mean, Virginia's 4-2, 6-2 right now in the Coastal. They're in the race. NC State's 5-2, 2-1. Wake Forest undefeated, of course. You look at all of those teams, they haven't beaten anybody. They all have that in common. But one thing's for sure about Pittsburgh, they're doing it convincingly right now. And if they win out, they have my respect. Maybe not for the college football playoff, but at least in the scope of the Atlantic Coast Conference this year, I do think they are more legitimate than any other, even more so than the team that is undefeated in their own league, which is Wake Forest.
And I'm curious to see what's going to happen over these final 5 games for Pittsburgh, because you talk about not playing, you know, offenses that are up to snuff in teams like after that Western Michigan game, New Hampshire, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, and Clemson. You know, they've only allowed 7, 21, 7, and 17 in those games respectively, but those offenses are not the most impressive to go up against. But props to Pittsburgh for going out there and getting it done and playing well against an offense offenses that are inept. But you look at these final 5 games, you've got Miami coming up. They're not terrible offensively. North Carolina has a future NFL quarterback on their roster right now in Sam Howell. Virginia has scored 30 points in every single game this season outside of 1. And then Syracuse can definitely light you up in the ground game. So Wake Forest has got to be able to prove themselves, not just offensively, but defensively as well, in 4 of these final 5 games of the season. There are going to be tests that are bigger than the ones that they have had up until this point.
Losers of the weekend,
I'm going to say Oklahoma. This was a team that was down 10-0 at halftime to Kansas, of all teams. They came back and won the game 35-23, but what a disappointment for this program that thinks that they still have playoff aspirations, and they may very well still have those. It's just I don't expect them to survive for very long against a team like Alabama or Georgia if they are going to face them in the college football playoff. It's just not going to happen. After seeing that performance, Caleb Williams might be the shot in the arm that Oklahoma has needed. He's not a bad quarterback. I think he's better than Spencer Rattler, who we could see enter the transfer portal here in the next couple of months or so. But they are not going to be able to get it done, I don't think, after seeing performances against Texas, Kansas State, and Kansas. They are just not a playoff caliber team in my eyes, but they still may get there just because they went out against I guess, average Big 12 slate.
I'm wondering, and Oklahoma is one of my losers as well, I'm wondering what Kansas found on film that allowed them to do what they did in the first half to Caleb Williams. And will other teams with better personnel than Kansas, one of the worst teams in all of college football, will they also truly be able to exploit it, Texas Tech this weekend.
Well, I think that's definitely a reality because this is probably one of the least talented teams, or it might be the least talented FBS team that Oklahoma has faced on their schedule up until this point. So you're thinking about facing a Texas Tech squad that has got more talent on their roster. You've got three top 25 teams in Baylor, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State to finish the season for Oklahoma. One of those teams is going to go out there and give Oklahoma a bigger run for their money. I think when you look at what Kansas was able to do, they held on to the ball for the majority of the first half against Oklahoma. Like I mentioned on yesterday's show, only three possessions for the Sooners in the first half against Kansas. They were also, Kansas was 9 of 13 on third down. They were just efficient with the football. They held on to it, and they converted on third downs, and it was just playing keep away from an Oklahoma offense that we saw in the second half literally not do anything other than score touchdowns when they had the football. So you're going to get exposed by a team that is more talented than you that can also hold on to the ball just as long.
Of course, he didn't win, but Mr. Bean, Jason Bean, the quarterback for Kansas, I think he played better than Caleb Williams. 17 for 23 passing, 246 yards. 10.7 yards per attempt, one touchdown, no interceptions. On the ground, added 59 yards rushing on 4.2 yards per carry. No touchdowns there. Of course, Caleb Williams put up three more touchdowns, but he's also playing with better players, a better offensive line, better guys around him that can take Kansas's attention off of Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams finished 15 for 20. 178 yards, 8.9 yards per attempt, two touchdowns, one interception. On the ground, 70 yards rushing, 8.8 yards per carry, one touchdown. Had a long of 40. You take that out, he would have been 7 for 30 and no touchdowns there on the ground. So I think outside of a couple of big plays here, consistently over the course of the ball game, Kansas's quarterback outgunned Oklahoma's quarterback.
I want to bring on Sting, the sports almanac, here real quick. Sting, can you tell me where Jason Bean played college before he got to Kansas?
Jason Bean?
Mm-hmm. Probably doesn't even know who that is. You're the sports almanac. No, that's why you know this information.
Give me a conference.
Man, I wish I knew.
Just say you don't know.
CUSA, I believe.
I'm going to say Tulsa.
North Texas.
Nice.
He was the successor to Mason Fine. We were talking about him the other day. Jason Bean played at North Texas for 3 years and then transferred to Kansas. The more you know, the more All you right. know.
I know somebody who goes to North Texas.
More you know. There you go.
Quick, what's the name of North Texas's football stadium?
I have no idea. Stinks Sports Almanac. There you go.
Is it Apogee Stadium?
It is. Bing, bing, bing. There you go.
I passed it. It's actually a nice-looking stadium.
See, the sports trivia is for y'all. I may know just random players that have transferred, but the sports trivia in terms of the stadiums and the rivalries and the trophies, that is y'all's department.
I can't wait for the Rib Trophy. That's obviously not the right name, but the Memphis UAB rivalry. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for that to be restarted.
Oh,
they
man.
Play for a giant rack of ribs. How that got started, I do not know.
I wish I knew.
Also, how is that pertinent to this rivalry game? I do not know, other than those two teams are in the heart of the Deep South. That is the only thing that I know. But there you have it. Another loser. I'm going to go with Coastal Carolina. 30-27 loss to Appalachian State on Wednesday night. Everybody's watching you. You're on the road. Appalachian State hasn't beat a ranked team since they beat Michigan, and you were the one who fell.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, App State was a team that I thought was going to be able to kind of sustain success in the Sun Belt this season, regardless of the two teams at the top outside of them that are playing very well right now in Louisiana and Coastal Carolina. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show, it's like these teams are going to beat each other up. And that's just the way it is. Coastal Carolina is just not as good of a football team as we thought they were.
Let's head to a quick break here. When we come back, we've got Rob on the phone lines with us. Rob, hang tight. We'll be back in just a moment. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Got 4 minutes left in the segment now as we head to the phone lines. We've got Rob from Memphis here with us. Rob, how you doing today?
Great, man. Listening to you on the app up here between Brinkley and Park in Arkansas on the way back to the farm and talking about the Auburn-Ole Miss game. I love this matchup. Only concern I have is the pass rush. I mean, Ole Miss is a really good team. If they decide they want to run the ball 40 times, they can do it. They want to throw the ball 50 times, they can do it. The question I'm going to throw at y'all is Derek Mason the kind of defensive coordinator? I think he is, who is good at adapting in real time in the games, because this is a game, if Auburn wins it, I fully expect Auburn to win it. It can really strengthen, you know, Harsin's recruiting pitch to come to Auburn. We'd be 6-2 with both losses to, at then, top five, top 10 teams.
I agree with that. And talking about the pass rush, I'm shocked that we haven't seen Derek Mason blitz a ton this year because he blitzed a lot at Vanderbilt. But Auburn may not have to blitz to get pressure on Ole Miss. Ole Miss currently right now tied for 72nd in the country in sacks allowed per game this year. Their offensive line's not that good. I think what they've just done well this year is they haven't really played any good defenses. They do a good job of spreading folks out horizontally. I really hope Owen Papo's back, because if he is, I think Auburn should be able to contain, maybe not stop, but contain Ole Miss, hold them to 27, 28 points. And if Auburn can keep them at 27 or 28, I think the offense can find enough points to win the game.
What about Romello Height, Caleb Johnson? What's their status?
Don't know anything about it. And I know that folks were wondering about stuff like that going into yesterday's press conference, and I had a hard time believing that anything was going to be talked about. Obviously, nothing reported, and you know, right now everybody's good to go.
What I'm saying is, as pass rushers, because that's where, I mean, most of those guys can help with the pass rush. And if you've got fresh legs out there in the fourth quarter, that's what allows teams like Auburn to seal the deal. I mean, Auburn's what, 334, 89, and 7 all time at Jordan-Hare, right at 80%. One of the most underestimated crowds in America is night football on the plains at Jordan-Hare. I mean, I'm going to be there. It's going to be Halloween night. Man, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. But Ole Miss is coming in. Absolutely, I live up here around them. They absolutely expect to win this game. They've only won in Auburn in 1892, 1999, 2003, 2015, four times in about 130 years. We can't allow. This is Auburn's biggest home game. It's bigger than Georgia because Auburn, this is a game Auburn can and should win. Auburn just didn't, it wasn't a good match with Georgia. But the receivers, if they play close to what they did against, you know, Arkansas, and the tight ends, man, I think Auburn can show up and get one of the better wins that they've had in a decade.
I agree with that. Rob, we're about to have to go to a break. I appreciate the call, my man.
You bet. All right.
That was Rob from Memphis. War Eagle to you, Rob. Appreciate the call. Keep calling in. We always enjoy talking to you. I agree with him. Auburn should expect to win this game on Saturday. I don't care if they're a top 10 team. It's time to show everybody what you're made of, Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like you mentioned, Auburn 32-5 since 1971 against Ole Miss.
I said a couple weeks ago, Arkansas, Ole Miss, there's a reason why Auburn has a five-year winning streak over them. You know why? They recruit better than them. The better than them in the trenches. The better than them everywhere. Auburn should expect to win. We'll be back with more of On the Line coming up at 3 p.m. Our
On the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on foxsports983.com and espnau.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Noah Gardner and Lance Daw with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Intern Belichick behind the board. Intern Sting in solidarity in this studio. All alone. I can't believe that a Houston Astros fan sits just 3 feet from me, now four, as he scoots away. Start of hour number two, we will start on the phone lines. We've got Specter on the line with us. Specter, how you doing today, my man?
I'm pretty good. I just want to say one thing. Karma is hell.
Elaborate on that.
Back in the summer, I was a pedo guy, and when they took the All-Star game out of Atlanta because of the voting situation, voter ID situation in Georgia. Well, now, I said back then, we were all sitting around talking, I said, it wouldn't be great if the Atlanta Braves got in the World Series. What would the commissioner do then?
Now he's got to come and watch.
That's right. That's right. Like I say, karma's hell, ain't it?
Spectre, appreciate the call, my man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That was Spectre on the line with us. He's got a point. Rob Manfred does have to come and watch baseball.
He does have to come
in
watch
the Battery.
Yeah, he has to watch the Atlanta Braves play in the Battery, which is fantastic. But yeah, it's going to be a fantastic series starting tonight. I want to remind everybody again, can't stress this enough, we've got coverage of the games right here on ESPN 106.7. So if you're not able to get to a television, you have to tune in right here at ESPN 106.7. We're going to have the play-by-play right here on this very channel. So go ahead and set it in your car. Go ahead and set it as one of your preset channels and make sure you tune back in whenever the game starts later tonight.
We're going to start off hour number two here with our Making Headlines segment, and it does begin with the World Series. That is the headline today in the South, or really across the entire country. The Atlanta Braves and the Houston Astros play Game 1 of the World Series tonight, 7:09 p.m. Central Time on Fox. Atlanta Braves headed to Minute Maid Park and the Short Porch in left field. Astros favored by 1.5. That's the run line. Going to welcome intern Sting into the studio, onto the show, the resident institutional cheater and Houston Astros fan. I'm just joking with you, man. Your whole life to me.
You can say whatever you want.
Your whole life to me, you will be known as the resident institutional cheater.
Okay.
Supporter of institutional cheating. It's just a joke.
I also have my team. My team has more world championships in my lifetime than yours does. So...
when was the last time that the Braves won the World
Series?
Exactly. 1995, maybe?
Darn, I wasn't alive then. So close.
Rip.
So close.
But
cheated to get there.
I just want to say at the top of this headline, I think everybody outside of the state of California and Texas, outside of intern Sting, will be pulling for Atlanta in this game.
You know, I actually saw a map, one of those little county maps that they do, where it's like what counties – majority are pulling for what?
Only like southeastern Texas.
Yeah, it was Harris County and kind of the surrounding areas right there in Texas, which I feel like is not true because I know that a lot of people in Louisiana root for the Astros because that's the closest team to them.
Question: what is the state of Texas's favorite baseball team?
Well, that's a tough one. Probably the Texas Rangers because they're older. And, you know, they have all of that North Texas and Central Texas.
And considering they are divisional rivals now, wouldn't most of that state probably be rooting against the Astros?
Possibly.
Yes.
Yeah,
possibly.
I would say the Rangers. But
we are all Braves stands.
Yes, sir.
Hey, you know what? The Rangers have no world championships either.
Yeah, I forgot they existed until you just brought them up. They're so
exactly.
Irrelevant.
a warning to the West. That was one of their tweets right before the season. They had a little... picture of some of their new pitchers is like a warning to the West. They finished fifth in the West.
Speaking of pitchers, the probable pitchers tonight that will end up being the starters, Charlie Morton for the Braves against Framber Valdez, the lefty for the Houston Astros. You watch the Astros often. Take us through Framber Valdez.
Framber Valdez is very, very good. He's young and he had an amazing game in Game 5. He did pretty well in Game 1, too, against the Red Sox, but Game 5 he had a no-hitter until the eighth. That could be wrong. I know he had a perfect game until the fifth inning. And, you know, I mean, I can't really say much about his repertoire with pitches, but I really like him a lot. Something that I'm concerned with for this matchup is the lack of pitchers that the Astros have. They have Lance McCullers Jr. is not going to be on the World Series roster. He's their best pitcher by far. And Zach Greinke's not stretched out to start. So... I think that's a key matchup for sure, I think.
Definitely think you break down the tail of the tape here. The superior pitching team, I do think you have to lend a hand to the Braves. They're deeper in the bullpen. They've got the better overall ERA. They've got the better overall bullpen ERA than the Astros. But is it so much of a difference in this series? And Lance, I'll ask this question to you. Is it so much of a difference in this series when you break it down at the plate? And sure, the Braves are much better than what the numbers suggest for the entire season. But the Astros this year batted .267. The Braves hit .244. The Astros are a lot better of a team at the plate. Maybe not as much power. Braves were one of the hardest hitting teams in the MLB as far as home runs are concerned, but the Astros definitely played it a lot more across the course of the regular season.
Yeah, offensively, I think that Houston has a little bit more firepower than Atlanta does. But in the words of Jock Peterson, it just takes a little bit of love. Just a little bit of love, and that's all it takes. So Atlanta's got heart. They're playing really, really hot right now. I think that that is a factor heading into this World Series, just knowing that you're going up against a hot-handed team. You saw an Auburn team, to relate it to Auburn fans here in the area, you saw an Auburn basketball team in their Final Four run get incredibly hot and beat three of the winningest programs of all time in college basketball to get to that Final Four against Virginia. Look, I know that Houston statistically has a lot of advantages in a lot of different areas over Atlanta, but you also have to factor in the fact that Atlanta is playing their best baseball as of right now. And while the series still may end up being a decisive Houston win, you have to look at this Braves team and say, man, they have done everything that they needed to do to get to this point, and you still have to be proud of them.
What's interesting about this is, for a team that only won seven more games than the Braves this year, everybody's talking about them being kind of like the Dodgers were, that they're just this superior team. They only won seven more games.
Yeah, the Astros struggled in the West sometimes. They had some noticeable issues around midseason with some of the lesser teams in the division. Which
I remember talking to you a lot, and you were angry about losses to the Royals.
Right, yeah.
I do remember that. Yeah, that was a good time.
And that's exactly what it was, just struggling against teams that you would probably assume were afterthoughts, whereas then they come to play against the teams with better records. So,
and we know how talented they are. They've been there before. They've been there. Right. They've done that. They've got a really good roster. I understand that. It's an especially great roster at the plate. Looking at these pitchers tonight, Charlie Morton, 14-6 on the year in 2021, 3.34 ERA, 216 strikeouts, 1.04 WHIP. We'll get you Framber Valdez's numbers in just a second as I get those pulled up. But this is the guy you want on the mound for the Braves.
Absolutely. He's been my favorite pitcher to watch this season, believe it or not. He's been my favorite guy. Every time I've watched him, he's been consistent. And I think that Atlanta is going to have a legitimate chance. Sometimes they'll bring out guys that are starting on the mound, and I will be like, oh no, this game is going to go south in a hurry, because I just don't trust them. They're just kind of, they're like a glass cannon, it almost feels like. And so with guys like Morton, I feel more assured because he's one of the steadier presences that I think Atlanta has on the mound.
Framber Valdez, 11-6 on the year, 3.14 ERA, 125 strikeouts, 1.25 WHIP. Something that was talked about on the postseason show that they've got on TBS after the Braves clinched their spot in the World Series was how this Houston Astros team does not strike out a lot at the plate. Braves are going to have to play some good defense. They're also going to have to bring their bats as well. The heart of this series is who can fight it at the plate. I think both of these teams are going to be able to pitch fairly well. I think the Braves do have the advantage in that category, but once again, I go back to, is the advantage in that category so great that it makes up for the difference at the plate that the Astros have shown to be the much better team at least consistently being able to plate runs and have explosive games? The Braves have been good, and they've been really hot down the stretch at the plate, but the Astros have been doing it all year long, and they've been doing it for seasons to come.
I'm looking for a more complete team effort from Atlanta in this series, and what I mean by that is I'm looking for Swanson to kind of pick things up. He'll be batting in the nine spot for Atlanta tonight. I'm looking for Austin Riley to continue to be efficient. Eddie Rosario and Freddie Freeman cannot carry this team alone to a World Series in terms of getting your own at the plate. They're going to need to see other guys make contact with the ball and actually put it in play consistently. And I'm not saying everybody's got a bat over 500 like Rosario has. I'm just saying you can't rely on him to be your one source of getting runs, because you talk about the offense for the Houston Astros. Sure, Atlanta may have good pitchers, but that offense is going to crack through in a couple of these games, at least for Houston. You're going to see an offensive showdown where these teams are both kind of not necessarily scoring at will, but there are going to be a lot of runs scored. You've got to be able to have more guys than just Freddie Freeman and Eddie Rosario knock things out of the park.
Lineup today for the Atlanta Braves, Jorge Soler will be leading off as the designated hitter. Freddie Freeman in the two spot, Ozzie Albies third, Austin Riley fourth, Eddie Rosario fifth, Duvall sixth, Darno seventh, Peterson eighth, and then Swanson rounding out the order at nine. For the Houston Astros, Jose Altuve leading it off, Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, Correa, Tucker, Gurriel, McCormick, and Maldonado is the lineup for the Astros tonight. I'll tell you this about the Braves lineup. you're going to have a hard time finding a harder hitting 2-6 for the Atlanta Braves. That's a fun group. Freddie Freeman, Ozzy Albies, Austin Riley, Eddie Rosario, and Adam Duvall, all guys who are cranking it right now.
I would personally argue that the Astros, those same spots, are doing the same as well. I mean, of course, you got Jose Altuve, but Jordan Alvarez.
Not as many home runs, though, is what the Atlanta Braves are hitting across right. that group. Which, you've got several guys. You've got four guys there with more than 30 home runs.
Yeah, but home runs aren't always the name of the game. A lot of time, it's just RBIs. Two RBI singles and doubles, things like that.
The Atlanta Braves have three guys with more than 100 RBIs in that group. The Astros only have one.
But also in the playoffs, the Braves have, I believe, 40 runs in 10 games, and the Astros have 67. That's pretty significant, and that's where it goes back to the home runs aren't the name of the game, where just hitting it into the outfield and driving in a guy.
Likewise, though, look at the defenses they've played. The Dodgers. Brewers are a good team.
I feel like that's kind of splitting hairs there. I think the defenses they've played have been pretty similar. The White Sox, maybe not, but the Red Sox, pretty good defense. I mean, they had to have a good defense to get past the Rays for sure.
I think right now when you look at both these teams, like you mentioned, Noah, just a few minutes ago, I think it's going to be really important that both these teams try and get their own at the plate. I think at the end of the day, is both these teams are going to have to score. You can't just rely on your defenses to win it for you.
Let's move on to our second headline here in our Making Headlines segment. Zeb Nolan will have surgery to repair a torn meniscus in his right knee. The South Carolina quarterback, it stinks.
A cautionary tale for any of ye who wish to play quarterback for the South Carolina Gamecocks. You will suffer the same fate as Lucas Doty and Zebulia Noland. You will lose an arm or something stupid like that.
No, that's Artur Sitkowski.
Oh,
broke his arm.
That's Illinois.
Who's South Carolina's quarterback then? I thought Nolan was their quarterback for the rest of the season.
Probably Jason Brown.
Is he a walk-on?
Yeah, he is a senior quarterback out of Virginia, not the college, just the state. Threw one touchdown, two interceptions against A&M last weekend. 8 of 14, 84 yards. South Carolina.
Well, I think
sounds like Zach Calzada.
Yeah, and you look at Zach Calzada's stat line, 12 of 24, 187 yards, two touchdowns, one pick. Calzada only completing still 55% of his passes after having his Steven Garcia moment against Alabama.
Well, I think at the very least, if nothing else, you can say Shane Beamer may have struggled in his first year, but it's not his fault. Every quarterback in the room just keeps going down.
I think he's done a good job with this team. There's still a shot for him to get to a bowl game. They just got to win two games over their last, let's see, they've played eight at this point, I think. Yeah, South Carolina's played eight games. They're 4-4 now. They just got to find a way to win two out of their last four games.
And Florida, hey, they're beatable.
They are beatable, and they play Florida this weekend. Nope, they play Florida next weekend after a bye week, so try and get healthy. But Missouri is a potential win. You also, I think, you have a prayer against Clemson now more this year than you have in recent years. The question is, can you find the points in that game? Because Clemson is going to play good defense. Now, Clemson won't move the ball against anybody, but can you find points against that good defense? And then I think South Carolina gets destroyed by Auburn. So can you beat Missouri? Can you beat Clemson? Could you shock Florida, potentially put Dan Mullen on the hot seat this year, which would be very Florida-esque to put a coach on the hot seat after making it to the SEC championship and being one possession away, right, from winning it. So that was one headline. Moving on to another one, Mike Tomlin said, never say never, but never about the USC head coaching job. He was adamant that that is not in the cards for the current Pittsburgh Steelers head coach.
Yeah, he's like, no amount that USC could pay me will get me to go coach for them. Which we've heard similar statements from coaches in the past, and they've eventually gone on to go coach at that respective university. Nick Saban moving from the Dolphins to Alabama being one of the most notable. But yeah, never say never.
When I saw Mike Tomlin's name come up, I said, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Unless the Pittsburgh Steelers were to fire him. But I don't think that that's the direction things are heading unless this ends up being a really bad year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I still have a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, and I fear the Pittsburgh Steelers. No matter how bad they may be, the reason for me getting uncomfortable when I play the Pittsburgh Steelers is that I know they're well coached. Mike Tomlin is a good coach. The fact that he was able to manage the personalities of guys like Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, all in the same room, and still on a repeated basis win as the football team has now deteriorated from an offensive standpoint – They still find ways to win games. I have a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. He finds ways to win football games, and he runs a tight ship. I think he's a good coach. But he made a great point. He said, why would I want to go and coach college football? And you think about how Tracy Rocker moves on to go to the NFL after taking the Auburn job earlier this year. And a lot of people said, well, you don't have to recruit. And that's the truth. People don't want to recruit. It's a nasty, ugly game.
Absolutely. It would be incredibly difficult, which is why I'm thinking, like you mentioned, Mario Cristobal, if he doesn't go to Miami, you talked about his ability to recruit. I think he would be another guy that you could potentially look at as a candidate for the USC job, because that's what you're getting into. I also want to point out, just kind of jokingly, about Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. It's like, look, if you're going to have divas like that in the locker room at Pittsburgh, you're certainly going to have them at USC, and that would be a fun dynamic to watch.
I'll say this about Cristobal. I don't see the move to USC. My reasoning for that is just because it's inside the same conference. USC, we know, although it's got a great fertile recruiting ground, possibly the best recruiting ground in all of college football, with LA right there. You're in LA. Although that may be true, we've seen a lot of coaches go in and fail, and I don't know if Cristobal is the guy to go into USC. It just seems very uncertain for me when you've got things rolling the way that you've got it. You're recruiting better than USC right now at Oregon. You're able to go into LA and get those players better than UCLA and USC are right now. I can see him at Miami, though, because of his Cuban heritage, the fact that he did coach at FIU in the early portion of his career, which is right there smack dab in Miami. I could totally see him going to Miami, and if he did go to Miami, with how well he recruits and how well he knows that area, he puts him back on the map. Miami's very much so would be in, now with Clemson going the way that it's going, not saying that that dynasty's over, but there's definitely vulnerability in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and it kind of feels like LeBron just left the Eastern Conference.
I'm curious, who do you think are the top candidates for the USC job right now? Like, who do you think they should hire? Or do we even know?
I don't think we know.
It may just take time.
James Franklin.
Man, I wouldn't hire him if I were USC. I wouldn't do that. I'd go after somebody else. I don't like what I've seen from him at Penn State. The questionable calls in game we've seen multiple times. We got to see him lose to Illinois.
Who would
past
you hire
weekend.
If you're USC, and who could you attract?
I don't know. That's what I was kind of thinking. I was sitting here trying to think, like, who outside of Cristobal would I get? And I'm like, well, if we can't get Cristobal, I'm not really thinking. I don't really know who else we'd get. Maybe we get Brian Harsin after he has a great year at Auburn. You know, if
I've suggested that. I suggested that a week and a half ago. I think 2 weeks ago after Auburn beat Arkansas, and I was like, man, watch out.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that Harsin would probably enjoy hanging out in L.A. So that definitely, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Quick question too before we go to break: better job, LSU or USC?
I would say USC.
Really?
Probably.
Yeah. You agree with 24/7 Sports. I disagree vehemently with you. Not enough to argue with you about it, but I'll say this. The last three coaches at LSU have won a natty. Last three coaches at USC, I think, have left with losing records, or they have been placed on the tarmac.
I think you look at these two programs historically, and maybe you could persuade me into thinking LSU. I just kind of went gut with my gut immediately and said USC. Just the prestige of that program, it being in Los Angeles, and, you know, talking about fertile recruiting grounds, LSU definitely has one in Louisiana, but LA is definitely an area where you can pull a lot of different recruits from. So I think both of them in their own right are very, very respective programs.
Nobody's really barking up your tree in Baton Rouge. You're going to get your guys in that state, whereas everybody coming from parts unknown, Alabama's now at this point going into LA and taking guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even think USC owns their own pipeline, owns their own city anymore. You're right from a history standpoint. USC is the more prestigious program from a history standpoint. But last three coaches that LSU have won national championships, I think that says something about the job. Also think it is one thing also to have an actual pipeline that nobody's coming in and really taking all of your best players. LSU's still getting pretty much anybody that they want on their recruiting board. They're recruiting well. I think LSU's vastly a more superior job. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue to take a look at winners and losers of the weekend. We wrap up that conversation from earlier talking about the biggest losers of the weekend in college football. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Winners and losers of the weekend. We talk about the biggest losers of the weekend in college football. We've already broken down a couple of them. Coastal Carolina, Oklahoma, falling behind Alabama in the AP poll. Whether or not that really matters, but I do think they had a bad weekend against Kansas. We got a couple of other losers, and there's some obvious ones because they actually lost, and they lost in heinous ways. Lance?
Illinois beating Penn State. Penn State is one of the losers of this weekend.
They are the loser of the weekend.
You are tonight's biggest loser. I'm sorry. But absolutely. Penn State, you know, with a questionable Sean Clifford, losing in nine overtimes to Illinois and Brett Bielema. Illinois running for over 300 yards, barely throwing the ball at all, just established themselves in the trenches. It's just good old Big Ten football, 20-18 and nine overtimes. Just everyday Big Ten football. Nothing here, nothing special to see.
How in the world can you not beat a team that averaged 1.8 pass yards per attempt, had 38 total passing yards?
And you just came off a bye week.
And you just came off, which is a fantastic point. You are rested. You are at home. You have your quarterback back.
Happy Valley was sad Valley.
It was depressed Valley. It was not a place to be. And it kind of felt like that. I've made this comparison so many different times. You know how when you turn on a Vanderbilt game and the life just gets sucked out of the room because it's like colorless?
It's like Dementors in Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's colorless. It's quiet. It feels like wet and damp. And it's just like you flip the channel. It feels like you got to go wash your hands because like you've just seen something that's just disgusting. That's how it felt when I was watching the last little bit of Penn State, Illinois. It's like, man, it feels like something has died in the stadium. Like what is going on?
It didn't look like Beaver Stadium.
No, it didn't at
all.
It
didn't.
And you know,
I actually thought they were playing in Illinois when I first flipped it over. And I was like, wait a minute, Penn State's wearing Navy. I'm dead serious. I really thought they were playing in Illinois. And then I looked around and I was like, oh, wait, they're actually playing at home right now.
And then on top of that, you know, talking about the individual performance, how do you muster 18 points at home in nine overtimes against Illinois if you're one of the top 10 teams in the nation up until that point? This looks bad for Auburn, but I will say, if Auburn was playing, before Sean Clifford got hurt, if they were playing the weekend that Penn State was playing Iowa, I think Auburn beats them. I think if Auburn got another shot at them, if they played twice that night, Auburn would have beaten them.
I agree with that. Kobe Hudson doesn't fumble at the start of that second half. Yep. I think Auburn's got a pretty good shot at beating them.
I think you see that game play out similarly to what we saw in LSU, where Auburn just kind of, you know, did their thing in the second half, and they were able to clamp down on defense. They were able to adjust, and they were able to run the ball.
College football, the war of attrition. War never changes.
It's a beautiful year this season. It's a beautiful season.
Oklahoma State is my last loser of the weekend, dropping to Iowa State. Of course, Iowa State was favored by a touchdown in Ames as an unranked team against a top 10 team. That is absurd. And they even got a good performance out of their quarterback, Spencer Sanders, who had three TDs, 9.4 pass yards per attempt, 225 passing yards, no interceptions. They got a good performance out of their quarterback, which you're not typically able to do that at Oklahoma State, but they did not get a good ground game. And I talked about that when we were picking this game, or when we were discussing this on Thursday of last week. I said, Iowa State's good at stopping the run. Oklahoma State, that is what it's predicated on. That's why I went with Iowa State when I made my picks. Breece Hall didn't do a whole lot in terms of yards per carry, but he ended up being the difference in this game, scoring that game-winning touchdown for Iowa State, winning 24-21. Brock Purdy was excellent as well, 27 for 33.
Brock Purdy, who has been on and off this season, was playing phenomenally this past Saturday against Oklahoma State. Spencer Sanders, who I cited in my pick and said he would not play well, still threw three touchdowns, which is surprising to me. This Iowa State defense is legitimate. The fact that they were able to hold Jalen Warren to only 76 yards rushing was impressive. And what a great bounce back win for Iowa State, who everybody coming into most people coming into the season thought they were going to be a solid football team. Some people thought they were a college football playoff team, which is insane to think about now.
Like, ESPN's FPI had them in multiple playoff scenarios.
ESPN's FPI is on something, man, and I want to know what it is because I want to try it myself. But Iowa State getting a bounce-back win against the number 8 team in the nation, I kind of feel like up until this point, I think a lot of people expected Oklahoma State, you're like, you know, at some point they're going to lose. You know, at some point they're going to lose after getting three top 25 teams in a row, top 25 teams in a row and beating them all. But yeah, it's just Iowa State getting a huge dub at home.
30 minutes left in the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll be back in just a moment.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dawe at ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. 30 minutes left in the show until the drive with Bill Cameron. Fun day today so far, talking Auburn to Ole Miss as well as some of the other action across college football, winners and losers of the weekend. If you missed any of it, go and find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Last 30 minutes of the show here, going to preview this weekend slate of college football, what we've got coming up. Guys, I want y'all to take a shot in the dark. Cheapest tickets in college football this weekend.
It's not a Vanderbilt game?
No, it's not. I don't think Vanderbilt's playing.
Vanderbilt may be on a bye. It's like,
Nope, they're not. It's Missouri at Vanderbilt, and that is in second place for cheapest tickets. They are not the cheapest.
Is UConn playing?
UConn is not the cheapest tickets, and I don't know if they're playing, but they're probably not at home.
Don't tell me it's a Power 5 team.
It is not a Power 5 team.
Okay.
But it is a game that is nationally televised.
Nationally televised. Okay. Give me a second. Let me think.
It is within 6 hours driving distance of us.
Is it a team from the AAC?
It is.
Is it South Florida?
No.
Okay.
That is definitely not within 6 hours.
Is it
That is about 8 to 12, depending on which route you take through Florida.
You've never seen me drive. I speed like nobody's business. I'm kidding.
For some reason I didn't believe that.
Eastern Carolina.
No. Number 2, Cincinnati at Tulane, 11 a.m. ESPN2. According to ESPN.com, tickets as low as $3.
For the number 2 team in the nation coming to town? Are you kidding? Well, I guess that makes sense because you want everybody there. But
you are good, though, because South Florida ECU is $4. Vanderbilt, Missouri is $4. You were on with a couple of those.
I was on point. Cincy, Tulane, 3?
The reason I said South Florida...
It is 3.
By the way, the reason I said South Florida is for like, I knew they were playing at ECU. For some reason, I said them first, like an idiot. But, yeah.
You're pretty close. Cheap tickets. I think Missouri and Vanderbilt's the most egregious, being an SEC game, where apparently you can find tickets as low as $4. You can find tickets as low as $4 for Boston College at Syracuse. Minnesota at Northwestern is $5.
That's good value.
Who wouldn't want to go hang out in the Carrier Dome at Syracuse? You're talking about, you know, the...
Talk about good value. Florida State at Clemson. Tickets as low as 17.
What's the bucket list game that you keep saying that you want to go to, Sting? The Montana State game?
Yes, the Brawl of the Wild. That's Christian Clemente's favorite game.
That's a bucket list game for me. And then going to the Carrier Dome for a Syracuse game, like a big one, I think is a bucket list game for me.
That Minnesota game is at Northwestern?
Yes.
That's great value. Go to Northwestern's campus in Chicago and see a game for $5.
Pretty sweet.
Most expensive tickets this weekend.
Cocktail party, I think, is up there, potentially.
The most expensive tickets eclipse it by double. More than double.
Oh no.
Tickets as low as $114 for Georgia, Florida. We're talking about lowest tickets here. So I guess I shouldn't have said most expensive tickets, but I should say on ESPN.com right now it says tickets as low as blank.
Is it Michigan State?
It is. $254. Tickets as low. That's the baseline for Michigan State is tickets as low as $254.
You wanna go?
Georgia, Florida is tickets as low as $114. No other games are over $100 this week as far as tickets as low as a baseline price.
All right, I'm getting 4, and we're all driving up to East Lansing on Saturday.
I have plans.
With me in East Lansing, exactly.
I was thinking we could go to the Tulane game.
Hey.
3 for $9, factor in some tax, some transaction fees as well for our credit cards.
I'll drive.
It's not that far, man. It's an easy drive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be fun.
Go watch the number 2 ranked Cincinnati Bearcats.
How much is the Ohio State?
We'll bring intern Bearcat with us, Dylan Lark.
Yeah, we'll bring him. Yeah. How much are the Ohio State tickets, do you know?
Ohio State. What time are they playing? They're playing at night.
Man, the Big Ten really
99.
Likes...
99. Tickets as low as 99 in Ohio Stadium in the Horseshoe.
Big Ten really likes to make their fans pay a lot of money for some terrible football games.
So that's just stuff that I found interesting. All of that on ESPN.com on their schedule. Whether or not all that's truthful or not, I imagine it's pretty accurate. But let's look at some of the slates of games here in these conferences. We'll start in the ACC. Pretty interesting slate here in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Miami at 17, Pittsburgh. Virginia Tech at Georgia Tech. Florida State at Clemson. Boston College at Syracuse. Duke at number 13, Wake Forest. North Carolina at number 11, Notre Dame. Louisville at NC State. And Virginia at number 25, BYU. What catches your eye in the league?
That last game, Virginia at BYU.
Bronco
Mendenhall. Both teams 6-2. BYU favored by 2.5 points. 9:15 at night. We're going to get a fantastic weekend of college football. We're going to get to watch Ole Miss Auburn, and we're going to go turn right back around. We're going to watch BYU Virginia to
this
kind of
is Bronco Mendenhall returning to his former team.
There you go.
I can't believe that you didn't mention that.
I just didn't know. Simply
wow.
Didn't know. It's like the Lane Kiffin reunion at Tennessee, but just like the light version of that.
Florida State Clemson catches my eye. That game at 2:30 on ESPN. Clemson. Not only because of logos, of course. I understand. I think Clemson could lose. That's why I'm saying it catches my eye. Florida State's 3-4 on a 3-game winning streak, guys.
I'm laughing
how
because
the mighty have fallen.
I'm laughing because the line is only 10.
Look, it's you tell 10. Me why Florida State can't win this game. They've beaten Syracuse and North Carolina in the last 3 weeks. If you can beat North Carolina and they beat them by 10, I think you can beat Clemson.
We're going to pick this game this weekend, are we?
100%. I don't want any part of it.
I don't want any part of it because my picks have not been good this weekend. Talk about winners and losers from the weekend. Shout out intern Sting, who had a baller weekend in picks.
Also,
82-39.
Yes, sir.
Woo. Also, why in the world is Clemson favored by 10? They have only beaten one team this year by more than 6 points, and that is South Carolina State, 49-3. Since that time, they've only beaten Georgia Tech by 6. Boston College by 6, and Syracuse by 3. In what world are we at this point now where we could say, yeah, Clemson's going to beat a team on a 3-game winning streak by 10 points?
I threw out a stat during the break, and I'll throw it out here on air. There are only two teams in the Power 5 that have yet to score 20 points or more against FBS competition, meaning football, bowl, subdivision, competition. Division 1, 130 teams. Only two teams have yet to score. Two Power 5 schools have yet to score more than 20 points. And that is Arizona, who is currently winless at 0-7. And there is Clemson. Clemson has yet to score more than 20 points against a football bowl subdivision team. You've got Arizona, in the words of Josh Pate, sucking water through a garden hose. And then you've got Clemson. What world are we living in right now?
I think Notre Dame, North Carolina... That could be a loss for Notre Dame, which could further dampen the spirits of Cincinnati's playoff hopes. If you don't want to see Cincinnati in the college football playoff, you better hope for North Carolina beating Notre Dame because there are fewer and fewer losses on this Notre Dame schedule.
I could care less about Cincinnati making the playoff. If I just get to see Notre Dame lose on any given day, I'll take it. So,
who do you think wins this game?
North Carolina, Notre Dame?
You know what to do.
I'd like to pick North Carolina to win this game. I really think I would, even though Jack Cohn is really figuring some things out. Notre Dame is kind of coming into their own late in the season, enough to make a push for the 4 seed in the playoff, only to get blown out by 500 against Georgia. That would be a brutal game. But going on a tangent. But yeah, I think North Carolina definitely has the horses to do it. They've got the offense to do it for sure. It's just Notre Dame is a much better team, a much, much, much better team than they were over the course of the first 2 weeks of the season.
Big 12 looks like it could have some upset specials. Texas at number 16, Baylor. Number 22, Iowa State. Big win. They go to Morgantown for West Virginia, who's coming off a big win against TCU. Two teams coming off big wins. Who has the hangover? Texas Tech could have the guns to keep up with number 4, Oklahoma, especially if they play like they did last week against Kansas, TCU, Kansas State, and then Kansas, number 15, Oklahoma State. That's the Big 12 schedule. Anything there that maybe catches your eye?
I really like the Texas-Baylor game. Look, Texas...
still looking to beat a good team this year. I haven't done it yet.
They're still trying to do that. Baylor has been playing lights out. I'm just saying, I know Mel Tucker is right now the number one guy that LSU is looking at, but I'm still looking at Dave Aranda, and I'm like, man, I would love to see that.
That's a good coach.
I'd love to see him at LSU for a couple years just to see what he's made of. Texas Tech, Oklahoma, I think definitely has your eye in terms of upset potential. After
Iowa State at West Virginia is the one that I'm like licking my chops. I could see it.
I picked West.
You just never know what you're going to get, man, with Iowa State this year. You just never know. And that offense isn't great. I think West Virginia could do kind of what they did to Virginia Tech earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Shock them early, and then they're in it.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It's like, I picked West Virginia once this season. I don't think I've picked them since. And who knows? May take a look at this matchup, may really dive into it before we get to Friday and make our selections.
SEC schedule is thin. Missouri at Vanderbilt.
Woo! Game of the year, baby.
There are no 11 a.m. games in the SEC. Everybody's either hitting at 2 o'clock or 6. You got Georgia at Florida, or versus Florida and Jacksonville in the cocktail party, 2:30 on CBS. Number 10, Ole Miss, of course, at number 18, Auburn. That's, I think, the big game of the weekend in the SEC, but I may be biased. In the number 12, Kentucky at Mississippi State.
Also, I don't want to shock anybody, but the line, according to CBS Sports, opened at minus 1 for Ole Miss. It is currently minus 3 for Auburn. So, there you go.
Did that open like a couple weeks ago?
It opened on Sunday.
Interesting.
So
that's interesting that it's moved that much. Georgia, Florida, I don't think that's going to be fun for Florida. Missouri, Vanderbilt, whatever. And then Kentucky, Mississippi State, though. Kentucky, Mississippi State. If you want to see somebody lose this weekend, could Kentucky potentially drop one to Mississippi State, a team that's playing some good defense and is figuring some things out on offense?
Well, we saw Mississippi State defeat a Texas A&M squad earlier in the season that has since done some good things, at least on paper. But Kentucky...
You know what that line is?
It opened at like a pick 'em, didn't it?
It's 1.5 to Kentucky right now.
Mm. That is a much...
Vegas is scary. They know stuff.
That's a much closer line than I would have anticipated, especially for Mississippi State coming off of a blowout loss to Alabama, so... we'll definitely keep tabs there. I think Kentucky wins that game, though. Just on the surface, I think Kentucky wins that game.
I think so, too. But it could be closer than maybe what most people would have given it credit for. So I think that one's an interesting one, just putting somebody on the road at 6 p.m. in Starkville. If Mississippi State can kind of hang in there, maybe make some things happen with their passing game, they could be in it late. Did beat Texas A&M. Of course, that was a very different Texas A&M team when they played, but... That is going to be an interesting matchup in the SEC at 6. While everybody's watching Auburn Ole Miss, Mississippi State could be up by a field goal going into that ball game late.
Mm-hmm.
Big 10, number 6, Michigan, and number 8, Michigan State. That's a big game. That's the big noon kickoff. Number 9, Iowa, at a Wisconsin team that just decapitated Purdue. Purdue, by the way, at Nebraska. That could be two losses in a row for Purdue, while Nebraska's still looking to beat a good team this year, but they're definitely improved. Rutgers at Illinois, Indiana at Maryland, Minnesota at Northwestern, and the number 28, Penn State at number 5, Ohio State at 6:30 on ABC.
The Big Ten has got a couple of interesting games this weekend. Shocking considering how terrible their product is. But yeah, a top 10 matchup between Michigan and Michigan State, that should be really, really fun. Michigan State, even though they are undefeated and they're the number 8 team in the nation, they have come really close to losing a couple of games this season, notably this past weekend, not this past weekend, but on October 16th against Indiana. They had a defensive touchdown in that game to win 20-15. So we don't know what could happen potentially there in East Lansing, and then Penn State, Ohio State. On paper, if Penn State didn't just come off of a loss against Illinois, I'd feel a little bit more excited about this matchup.
Wisconsin, Iowa's interesting, man.
The fact that Wisconsin is favored in this game makes me laugh. That is hilarious.
Favored by 3 at home, so kind of a pick 'em there. Wisconsin right now playing very good defense on a 3-game winning streak, having beaten Illinois, Army, and Purdue. Purdue, they beat them 30-13, whereas Iowa, the last time they played was 2 weeks ago, lost to Purdue by 17. Law of syllogism does not apply here, but I definitely think this one will end up being a close game.
I agree. Even though Graham Mertz has really, really struggled this season, I mean, he has just been awful. 2 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, didn't eclipse 50, he did eclipse 50 yards passing last week, but barely 52 yards passing. I don't think Wisconsin's going to be able to rely on their ability to run the ball in this game against is still a stout Iowa defense. So who knows? Who knows? It is at home for Wisconsin.
for a large part of this year, the Pac-12 had a lot of teams right now. There are just one team ranked in the Pac-12 right now out of their entire slate playing this weekend. Washington State at Arizona State, Colorado at number 7, Oregon, Oregon State at Cal, which don't look now, Oregon State and Oregon tied atop the Pac-12 North, Arizona at USC, UCLA at Utah's probably, as far as records are concerned, the best game this weekend, and then Washington at Stanford. This schedule makes me want to barf.
It makes me want to throw up. I mean, there's nothing else I could really say about it other than shout out to Oregon State for somehow being 5-2 right now and trying to get to bowl eligibility this weekend. And then shout out.
I think they do it.
I think so. And then shout out to Oregon, who just didn't look fantastic against UCLA last weekend, but they were able to get it done.
Bounce back win there for them, where they've been kind of disappointing over the last few weeks. Only beat Cal by 7. They just haven't been extremely hot since knocking off Ohio State earlier in the year. It looks like the Pac-12 is going to get left out from the college football playoff yet again. And that was a look at some of the major games happening in Power 5 football this upcoming weekend. Stuff to look at throughout the rest of the week. We'll be back with more of On the Line talking Auburn Ole Miss when we come back. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner, Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. We got about 5 minutes left of the show till the drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck coming up. Stay tuned for that from 4 to 6. And then you got World Series coverage tonight, ESPN 106.7. Listen to it right here, once again, on ESPN 106.7. Talked a lot of college football today. Lance, news of the day. Let's try to wrap it up here. Takeaways today, you had media availability. We've talked winners and losers of the weekend, as well as World Series convo. Let's send it out.
I think one of the most important things for me is the Atlanta Braves lineup. Soler is back batting number one for the Braves, and you went through the lineup earlier, but it goes Soler, Freeman, Albies, Riley, Rosario, Duvall, Darnold, Peterson, and then Dansby Swanson hitting in the nine spot. I think it's really important that the Braves have him back for this World Series. Man, I mix up my teams that I have bias towards.
The Braves are definitely the topic of conversation going into the evening. That game tonight, 7:09 on Fox, as they are in Minute Maid Park. I'll tell you, there's a lot of juice in that order and a lot of pull power to that short porch. I think some runs are going to be scored tonight, both teams, though.
What would you predict for tonight's game in terms of final score?
I think this thing gets, 7-6, 6-5, something like that, something close.
Who you picking?
Give me the Braves. I'll do it.
I can't
pick against my teams.
Sting?
I'm going to go with 5-2 Astros.
Dang.
How do you hold the Braves to 2? I'm just curious about that.
In the words of Sting, I'll go 119-4 Astros. I'm just kidding.
Well, great pitching and just
the Braves
great
are
play
hot
in the field.
Right now.
Yeah. That can all just turn on a dime, though.
If you were a coach, you would be the worst interview ever.
Man,
probably.
What did you do out there today, coach? Well, great pitching, great fielding, great hitting.
Sometimes we just do everything right, and it's just...
I think there's going to be a big play out of the outfield that shuts down what would otherwise have been a big play for Atlanta.
Probably
in about the middle of the game.
If all of this happens...
I was oddly specific.
We're going to look real stupid tomorrow, and Sting's going to come in and be like, yeah, well, Astros...
Although, hey, I will say this interesting stat. The Astros are 0-3 in game ones in the World Series in their franchise history.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Braves in 6.
I think the Braves coming into this game, I don't think that they cool off either. I think that they're still playing with a chip on their shoulder because most people still are not projecting this team to have a shot in this thing.
Belichick, you had some thoughts?
Oh, no, I was saying you said Braves in 6. I'm fully Astros in 6 right now.
I'm Astros in 6 as well. That's my official prediction, but I kid.
How's former intern Jacob handling this? Atlanta homer other than the Atlanta Falcons.
He was struggling the other night when we were watching that game.
Did you see? You tweeted it out,
yeah,
the picture of him on the floor.
He was near tears, happy that this is the first time his team has been to the World Series since he's been alive.
I remember that feeling.
President of the Jungle as well.
As a Cubs fan, I understand that feeling 100%.
Was a good time to be alive.
Very much so.
That's why I hope it's a really competitive series. I'm excited for my fans who are Braves fans. And you know what? If they do end up beating the Astros, I'm just going to be happy for them because I remember.
Are you?
I'm going to be sad that my team lost, but I'm going to be happy that they're happy because I remember what that feeling was like to win the World Series. It's a top five moment
it
for
is
me.
The
it
best
really
moment.
Is. Yeah.
The first thing I'm going to do after we lose in six is be like, well, Acuna's coming back. So there's something there. Dude, this team with Acuna right now, I mean, they're good. Like, Atlanta's really, really good. But with Acuna, man.
That's what's been so impressive to me is that they've done all of this recently without Ronald Acuna.
Signed Freddie Freeman to a lifetime contract.
Why have they not paid the man?
It'll happen.
I am asking the same question about the Astros and Carlos Correa right now.
Just pay him.
Just pay him.
One of your best
pay
players.
Pay him whatever he wants. You will make that money back.
I'd love for the Cubs to sign Correa. I'm not going to lie.
Don't take him from us.
Don't take him from me.
Well, you know what? I'd rather him go to Chicago than New York.
Yeah, I was waiting to say. I was about to say that the flaming hot asteroid of the New York Yankees in the free agency market, they'll come in. Or the Dodgers.
Woo, no salary cap.
Or the Dodgers.
Great for baseball.
It is. Awesome. I think it is.
Yeah, I'm looking at the map that I'm looking at the map that you were talking about earlier, Sting. Yeah, everybody outside of Texas and Louisiana is pulling for the Braves.
Yeah, so that makes sense because like there was that one, and I was like, well, that seems a little exaggerated because I know a lot of people in Louisiana are here for Houston.
That's it for another edition of On the Line. Stay tuned for The Drive with Bill Cameron coming up 4 to 6 p.m. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. You know where to find us.